Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. All hail King Ange as Celtic sweep up title number 53. Off with Queen's Park as Dundee clinch promotion to the Premiership as champions. And we have some special episodes you do not want to miss. Hello, disciples of Scottish football. Welcome along to another Scottish football podcast hosted by me, Andrew Slavin. And I am joined by the wonderful, the mercurial, the West Ham senior producer, Laura Brannan. Hello, Laura.
Hello, how are you doing?
I am losing my mind.
That sums up the business end of the season, doesn't it?
Welcome to my meltdown. But mixing everything together, keeping things sticking, gluing together, it's our editor extraordinaire, Finlay Marks.
Hello. Have you had a nice quiet bank holiday weekend then, Andrew?
I have been chewed up, spat out, eaten again, and then maybe a little bit of poo came out. Very big Sunday in the National League, doing the playoffs, back-to-back games. We had drones, we had 10 goals, we had last-minute equalisers taking us to extra time, which, don't get me wrong, when you're a fan, it's amazing. When you're producing it, it's amazing. But when you think you're maybe getting out the door and you realise you have to stay for another half an hour, maybe an hour, you're like, oh, man, but it's a great story. Yeah, we had medical emergencies, we had drones delaying play. Yeah. It was absolutely wild. But that's not Scottish football. That's what people don't want to listen about. And yes, I am tired. Right, so we'll kick things off with our typical funnies of the weekend.
I liked Jota wiping out Stephen Naismith just before halftime. I mean, look, there was nothing in it, obviously, but it was a good wee moment. I was half expecting Stephen Naismith to stand up and absolutely lamp on one, but he took it very well. He was a good sport. And the other one was Matt O'Reilly's little subtle dig at Cammy Devlin on his Instagram post. He was subtly accusing him of being a cheat by tagging the word dive on his body.
Oh, really?
Is that subtle? Because I think that's
obvious. Well, I don't think you don't see it unless you actually like tap the photo and it tells you who is tagged in the picture. So unless you actually tap on the photo, you're not likely to see it. And why would you ever really tap on the photo to see who's tagged in it? I just thought it was a little bit subtle. Kind of like it. At the same time, you also won a league, so it's maybe not the main focus you'd be on, but I did enjoy the kind of little shithousery there.
Jesus Christ. My God. What is the world coming to? We're just slagging people off in social media. Oh, dear.
I think that's the thing. Like, it's just a football da thing, isn't it? I can feel it growing stronger every day, the power of the football da. But I'm just like, regardless of which team it is or which player it is, I'm just like, oh, is it really that? I mean, you're professional footballers. Like, why are we doing stuff
who've just won the league?
Go and enjoy
your champagne. You won the game 2-0. It doesn't really matter if you dive or not. Get over it.
Yeah.
All for the shithousery on the park. Find it a little bit tedious when it's stuff like this on social media. But hey, it's a different generation. Speaking of champions, going down a division in the Dundee Queen's Park game, which I know we'll get into properly in a little bit, there were just a couple of lovely things that I saw. One was, did you guys see the fans on ladders propped up at the side of Vocal View trying to get a thing? They weren't young. They were two men that shouldn't really be up a ladder, I don't think.
I like this. It took me back to the COVID times when everyone was kind of sitting on
ladders?
Do you call it? Well, ladders, yeah, sure. Or electricity boxes or whatever sources inside it. It was just like any means possible. Can we see over the wall? I like that. It was good back then when the police weren't trying to close it down, and it was nice the other night as well, seeing the fans there at the Queen's Park game.
It was good. There was also, I loved the lad, there was a guy who'd really decked himself out for the occasion, a Dundee fan, covered himself in blue I don't even think it was face paint. I think it was more, you know, that stuff that you get at the Holly Festival, you know, the Colours Festival.
Yeah, where it's all
the
powder dust. It was more like powder or dust that was on him. But I think because he had, he had a tremendous haircut. It was very sleek and trim in that he had no hair. But he looked very much like the character from Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, the guy that whistles and his arrow kind of snakes its way through baddies and things like that. Who's completely blue. Can't remember the character's name.
Gondu.
He looked exactly like that, but in a Dundee strip in Stenhouse Muir. So it was him. I really enjoyed that.
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
Right, we're going to start our news section with the PFA Player of the Year Awards, which is happening this weekend, weirdly, even though there's still a few more games to go. And we don't have the Premiership one yet, so we've only got Championship League 1, League 2, because we're recording this on Monday. Premiership will come later. So can we kick things off with the Championship nominees? We've got Depo Akinyemi from Ayr United, Dom Thomas, Queen's Park, another Queen's Park player, Grant Savory, could be a salty choice, or Paul McMullen. Who do we fancy the most?
For me, it's got to be Paul McMullen, surely.
I think I agree with you, because the Player of the Year award, to me, I think, is always about trying to look at the consistency over the course of the whole season. And I think while Depo Akinyemi's had some really good purple patches for Ayr United, he's kind of tailed off at points during the season as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets it, but I think overall, yeah, I agree with you. I think Paul McMullen over the course of the season was really the driving force in that Dundee midfield behind their ultimately successful bid for the title.
It is. It's exactly that. It's the driving force. Is it the perfect term for it? And you look at Antoniemi's goals, honestly, like 24 goals, incredible. And he went on an absolutely scoring one around the start of the season. I tail off slightly, but I mean, he's been consistent the whole way through. I wouldn't grudge him getting it in the slightest, but I think through the years more than just how many goals you score. And Paul McMullen for me has just been an overall, the consistency from him has been perfect for Dundee.
What about League One then? We've got Callum Gallagher from Airdrie, Kyle Benedictus from Dunfermline, Matty Todd, Dunfermline, and my personal favourite, Rory Payton from Queen of the South.
Well, tell us why Rory Payton should be winning Player of the Year then, Andrew.
Well, the thing is, if you look purely from not just his goals, 26 of them this season, 7 assists, obviously these are all competitions as well, but he's only 23 years old. He's the top scoring under 23-year-old in all four divisions of Scottish football this season as well. And considering where Queen of the South are in the season that they've had, they're not exactly challenging, but he has been the standout player. But I'm going to be biased anyway, aren't I? But I think those stats kind of, you know, pique the interest more than the others for me.
They're really impressive. For me, I personally don't think defenders, particularly centre-backs, get enough recognition in Player of the Year awards. It's always the attacking players and the front players. So I love that Kyle Benedictus is on this list. And I just think he's been absolutely imperious at centre-back for Dunfermline this season. So I would love to see him. Also, we don't have enough players in the Scottish leagues that have got Latin names, and he sounds like he's a gladiator. So I'm all for players like that getting recognition as well.
Yeah, I think that one for me is a foregone conclusion. I think he's been outstanding this season for Dunfermline.
League Two, we have Charlie Riley, Albion Rovers, Craig Slater from Forfar, Dale Carrick, Stirling Albion, Tommy Goss from Annan.
Dale Carrick, 25 goals for the champions this season. And I know I just literally said it's not all about goal scorers, but he has played such a massive part in them winning the league and getting promoted this season. It's really hard to see past that.
There's no doubt in Dale Carrick's had a great season for Stirling Albion, and he scored the goal that clinched them the league title, which was absolutely beautiful. I can't remember if it was a volley or a half volley, but it was a fantastic strike. I would say it's more impressive what Charlie Riley's done. You look at his stats, and he doesn't play as an out-and-out striker. He plays really more as a kind of a left-sided midfielder, attacking midfielder. He's played 34 games in League Two this season. He scored 22 goals from the left wing with 13 assists for the bottom club. And I just think that those numbers are really impressive in a team that really did not perform at all well this season. He was a a real standout. And again, like it's, it kind of generally goes to form, doesn't it? That the players that are mostly nominated are from the teams that are doing well. I think it's great when you have a player that has such an amazing standout season. He's also really young as well. He's only 21, Charlie Riley, and moved there from Partick Thistle. Grew up in the Hamilton youth setup, which is renowned for having produced so many great players. So I expect big things from Charlie Riley going forward. I think it would be an amazing thing if he was to get the nod in League Two.
Just being from a biased Queen of the South point of view, picking out an ex-Queens player, Tommy Goss for Annan, top goal scorer in League Two. He is someone who has not had a great time of it leaving Queens and now going to the local team Annan and doing so well there. Annan finishing third this season into the playoffs, could get promoted for the first time ever into League One, which would be exceptional. So there's actually quite a big battle for that in terms of the League Two nominees. So given that we haven't had the nominees from the Premiership yet, it's more than likely going to be three Celtic players and maybe Lauren Shankland's Furuhashi will be in there, Hatate will be in there, Carter Vickers for Celtic probably be in there as a standout this season. All of them have been exceptional, but Lauren Shankland is undoubtedly should be in there in the equation as well. But any other standouts for you guys?
Sadly, I think it will be exactly what you're saying. It tends to be three players from whoever wins the title and one token non-Old Firm player, which is a real shame because whilst Celtic have been relentless this season, and you could pick out any number of their players, Hatate, O'Reilly, Carter Vickers, Jota, Furuhashi, personally I think there's a lot of talent that will probably be overlooked. I think even in the striking department, obviously Shankland's had a great season, Kevin Van Veen's been unbelievable for Motherwell this season, Duke I think at Aberdeen is more than deserving of a shout, maybe not quite player of the year, but I think players like Jan Danda up at Ross County's had a terrific season. He's been so influential and important there. So I don't know, they'll always be bickering around the nominations because people feel hard done by, especially from non-Old Firm players that will probably get overlooked. I think it's been a strong season for a lot of players across the board. There's been a lot of standout solo performances this season, and it's been great to see the likes of Shankland, Van Veen, you know, hitting the figures that they've done. You know, I can't remember the last time there were two non-Old Firm players that hit 20 goals in a season. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I don't expect there to be any major surprises in there.
See, that's it. I don't expect there to be many surprises, but it's the way the voting is, because this is the players that vote themselves. And you think about it, you can't vote for your own teammate. So their standout opposition player is going to be from a game where they probably felt they walked off the pitch, run ragged, and absolutely battered to bits, and thought, I couldn't control him for 90 minutes. He is superior to my ability, and that is the reason why he's a standout. And at the end of the season, I'm still thinking about it, and he is the one that is my go-to. And the chances are that happened when they played against the likes of Celtic and Rangers. And this season, probably more so Celtic. They are the champions. They are by far the best team in the league this season. So it's not a surprise that players of all the other teams are going to vote for Celtic players. And then you get the likes of the Celtic players. Who are they going to vote for? Well, are they going to vote for Rangers players? Biggest rivals? I don't know. Also, they've been superior to them in every game this season. So they might actually think, well, no, they've not been a match for me this year. And how many are they actually going to stand out from the so-called smaller teams in the league, and especially to players that don't watch a lot of football outside of their own games, and maybe don't even have a lot of friends across the different teams as well. So you've got to really kind of think of how it's all working up in the voting. So it's absolutely a foregone conclusion it's going to be dominated by Celtic players. The only question is, how is it split up? Because if you're going to all pile in and vote for Celtic players, it's just really a case of who's going to lead in terms of who's going to break up those votes.
Also worth mentioning the potential of the young player of the year as well. And in terms of looking outside the Celtic and Rangers bubble, the likes of, it's a Liverpool low knee, but Leighton Clarkson at Aberdeen was amazing in the first half of the season. Scored some absolute pearlers, only 21. His technical ability, I think, is really, really strong for his age. But another player as well is Motherwell's Max Johnston.
Yeah, Max Johnston's an interesting one. He went on loan for the first half of the season to Cove So I don't know if, in terms of that half of the season, was very much about his progression. But since returning, and especially when Stuart Kettlewell's taken over at Motherwell, he has been an absolute mainstay in defence. He's been outstanding. He's nominated for one of the goals of the season. In fact, so is Leighton Clarkson as well. I think he's probably one of the contenders for it. Both of them outstanding. Max Johnson is definitely one, I think, to watch. Not so much for this season, but next season, I think, could be an early shoo-in for winning England Player of the Year.
I think Leighton Clarkson's been, again, the most consistent and the most impressive young player in terms of the goals he's scored and the way that he's been part of Aberdeen from a pretty rubbish part of the season, but all through this amazing run they've been on more recently with Barry Robson as well. I think he would be the shoe-in for it this year.
Right, moving on to something which caused quite a lot of uproar on social media was the news of the SFA announcing the Scottish Cup final kickoff time. It was talk of a 12:30 kickoff, but it's now going to be a 5:30 kickoff, so it doesn't clash with the English FA Cup final. Laura, dare I go to you with this one and your love-hate relationship with English football.
Oh my God, this one riled me so much. I am so annoyed that we are just living in the shadows of English football all the time. And it's always got to be, oh, whatever they're doing, we'll do. Or whatever they're doing first, we'll work around them and we'll wait for them to give us permission. And oh, the BBC want to show both teams. They own about 17 channels, but can't put us on at the same time. Why are we like disrespecting our game so much? The Scottish Cup is one of the oldest trophies in football. We've also clashed with the FA Cup final several times in our history. Why are we not just owning our game and saying, do you know what, this is our flagship competition, we are playing it at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, regardless of what another country is doing?
I think that there are two things to this. Obviously, maximising television audience is... but the thing that, because the BBC absolutely will try and protect its audience, so the English FA Cup final will get, like, there'll be millions watching that, absolutely millions. And look, there will be an English audience for the Scottish FA Cup final as well. And they probably will watch. There'll be a lot of people thinking, right, well, I can, you know, get the beers in or get the boys round or the family round and watch the English FA Cup final, and then we can watch the Scottish Cup afterwards. So there'll be that element of, like, a big bumper football day out for everyone.
Yeah.
But I also agree with, like, you know, we are pandering to the English FA, very, very much so.
The thing is, like, a lot of... I was kind of talking about this on Twitter this week, a lot of the replies were saying, oh, but I wouldn't watch Celtic Inverness anyway, it was a foregone conclusion. And it's not about the fixtures. It doesn't matter what teams are involved in the English final, it doesn't matter which teams are involved in the Scottish final. To me, it's principle. And you should be standing by your competition. Have the confidence in your game. Stand up for yourself and say, well, yeah, we're not going to get the same viewing numbers as English football, but have the confidence to say, well, we still want to play at 3 o'clock because that is a slot that the cup final should always be regardless. And you're giving viewers a choice.
Well, yeah, all I would say to that is, why can't you change? Why aren't we allowed to change? Why couldn't someone say that actually we're doing something different for the benefit of the game? Actually being at 5:30 at dinner time when everyone's eating and everyone's not really paying attention to football.
Well, on this occasion, if Inverness fans can't actually get home from the game because the last train out of Glasgow was at 7 o'clock in the evening when the game is still going. And if you think about it, if the game goes such time penalties, it's pushing on 9:30, like back at 9, 10 o'clock before they actually get out of Hampden back into the city centre of Glasgow. How do they get home?
And it's
the
same.
And it was the same for the half 12 kickoff, that it wasn't possible for them to get down in time. So it turns into a very expensive long weekend for these travelling fans. It's absolutely fine for Celtic fans, but it's putting other things first and not actually thinking of the supporters. And I just want the governing bodies in our country to actually think about, firstly, our game and promoting our game and battle up our game. But secondly, think of the fans. They're the lifeblood of our games.
Yeah, no, you're right. Well argued, Laura.
Well, one point to actually put in, I think is interesting now off the back of the way the Championship table finished at the weekend. Because Inverness didn't make the playoffs, they're now going to go a full month without playing a game.
Yeah, wow.
Something like 29 days. which is longer than what most teams get in the summer now, before they go back for pre-season. So I'm actually really interested to find out how that affects their bodies and when they get time off and how they approach it, because they're now going to have basically two pre-seasons. This has now turned into really bad timing for them.
Boateng can't gather it. Come for Thomas, and now Cameron, who feeds a nice ball forward for McCowan. Looking to isolate Fox. Here he goes! Luke McCowan! And surely now Dundee are champions and on their way back to the Premiership. Bedlam in the visitors' end.
Right, well, let's round up the SPFL weekend, because there really is only one place to start, and that is in the Scottish Championship. Dundee are champions and will be in the Premiership next season, but what a final day of the season. All I would have to say is I was travelling home during all of this, and the only thing I could get through it was your texts, Finn. Your text commentary. oh my God, this is so good. Oh, I can't wait for another text from Finn. Oh, the updates were insane, man. It was great.
It was just the most brilliant end to the season. I think the one of the few times I've been thankful for it, our youngest Josh is only 3.5 months old at the moment, and he's still getting up around about 4 a.m. for a feed at the moment. But I was so thankful of it, because that was my natural wee alarm clock to get up and have a bit of time to watch the build up and everything to it. And it was fantastic. I mean, it was all set up for the drama to unfold, but I think even then, you know, what we were delivered, especially in the Dundee Queen's Park game, it was box office stuff. It was absolutely fantastic. And I think we had something like, you know, the placings in the top half of the table all changed so much during the night. But I think there was something like 8 or 9 different changes in terms of placings as the night wore on, in terms of who was in. And there were points where a team was in sixth, there were points where teams were in second. You know, it was amazing. It was incredible to watch.
I think Ayr went from the outside the playoffs, but then finished second at the end of the day.
It was the Ayr one for me. It was like, even the next morning, I'm kind of double checking, did Ayr actually finish second? Because there was a long spell where they were not getting anything out of the night. I loved this. Like, I was, I'd went to the pub before the game and was planning to go home just in time for the kickoff. Decided, you know, stay for one more, put the game on my phone, and I had to mute all of Finn's notifications coming through because he was ahead of me. Because, you know, he lives in the future. But honestly, it was that way of, You could have 4 goals in 17 minutes, was it?
Oh, wow.
It was unreal. Like, it starts off, and you're like, oh, okay, Dundee are winning. And then he got the bar, and like, I'm getting shouts over going, Queen's Park, every close. And I'm running back over. And it's the ultimate drama of 20 minutes gone, and you've got 4 goals for the two teams at the top of the league. Absolutely unbelievable, incredible. And it is everything we hoped for and more. It completely lived up to its billing. Absolutely.
So perfect, isn't it? I mean, the sad side of it is that someone has to go down. It was Cove Rangers in the end. Commiserations, Cove. But there was heartbreak for Morton and Inverness as well. They miss out on the playoffs as well, don't they? So that's going to be a tough one. But interestingly, these playoffs are going to be for Queen's Park. Bear in mind, it wasn't that long ago they had an unbelievable lead at the top of the table. So they've missed out. But they're still not playing in their new stadium.
Yeah,
they're still going to have to play at Stenhouse Muir Stadium. The one thing I will say about Queen's Park is that Owen Coyle, the manager, has a knack of playoffs. He won them as a player in England at Wembley for Bolton. He won one as a manager at Burnley in England at Wembley. Well, he got Dundee United promoted, I think, not through the playoffs, but still in a final day of the season. So he has a knack for the playoffs. It'll be interesting.
It's always interesting to see how momentum carries a team through, and if the heads go down for Queen's Park, or if they think, right, no, we've just got to rally, we know what we've got to do, and then they'll take it from there. It'll be, it's so exciting. I honestly can't call it. I know a couple of weeks ago I thought Partick Thistle were the ones that would go up via the playoffs, or the ones that would certainly go into from the Championship to play whoever finishes 11th in the Premiership. But it'll be really difficult to call. It's just, you don't know how these games are going to unfold. I think just quickly going back to the Queen's Park Dundee game, I think there was one point where the score was 3-2 to Dundee, and this is just before half time. There had been 5 shots on target for both sides, 3 for Dundee and 2 for Queen's Park, and all 5 had gone in. So you just Clinical. You don't know what's going to happen in these games. And which is why we're talking about the goals. Charlie Fox's goal, by the
That's
way.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Special mention for what an unbelievable goal. Like, I feel like we're talking about earlier goal of the season, and I know it's Premiership goals that get judged, but holy mother of God, this goal needs like a medal in itself. It was incredible.
I think the fact he got 2 goals, and one of them, like any striker would be happy with that, but the fact he kind of just melts it from the edge of a box, it's just as great to see a centre-back do that. And, you know, ultimately disappointing for him. But I think that's the thing, that kind of thing. You get these amazing matches, you get these amazing moments of quality, and I just hope that that drama continues into the playoffs. We see some great games. I always like when 2 championship teams come up. I know the playoffs are kind of designed for the team in the division above to stay up, essentially, and that's kind of dictated that format by the Premiership teams. But yeah, I quite like when 2 teams come up. So it'll be good to see what happens.
I was quite like... To me, Dundee is a Premiership team anyway, so it doesn't feel to me like, because they're straight down and straight back up again, it doesn't really feel like we're getting a Championship team out of this. I would absolutely love to see the likes of Ayr or Queen's Park come up just for something different next season. It would be fantastic. But as you say, it's so heavily weighted towards the Premiership team that I'm absolutely convinced that it's going to be the likes of Kilmarnock that finish 11th and they'll win the playoff. That's kind of how I just see it going, but... to have a new team in the league would just be so fresh and so exciting.
It's going to be tough. Like, if you look at the bottom of that Premiership, Dundee United and Kilmarnock both on 31 points, St Johnstone on 36, so they look almost there.
That was a massive win for them though, the weekend, beating Dundee United 1-0.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That is huge, huge result. I think Dundee United will be massively disappointed with that. When they went down to 10 men, they hit the post in the dying seconds as well. And I just the gap that St Johnstone have opened up now, I just feel like that was a massive result that could go a long way for them now. I feel like that's kind of them turned that corner into safety.
Yeah, I look forward to the playoffs. They're always great. I just hope that they're televised properly. That's all I want. As someone who's doing it currently for the National League in England, there is just always drama at that level. But let's stay with the Premiership, because we should mention that Celtic are champions for a 53rd time. Hearts could not postpone Ange Postecoglou's Celtic from lifting a successive league title. Alex Cochrane was sent off. It was a yellow card that was then taken away and it became a red card. But that was pretty much the turning point. Kyogo Furuhashi once again scoring. I think that's his 30th goal of the season, his 50th goal for Celtic as a whole. Celtic have now won 11 of the last 12 trophies. It's just, it's unreal, man. Like, look, it's there. I can see Finn's face. He's like, I do not want to talk about this. But you can't avoid it. Like, I know a lot of Scottish football fans or just probably bemoan it and be like, yeah, well, they should win the title. They should do that. And a lot of people will find it a lot very boring. But you have to applaud what they have achieved, because Ange Postecoglou hasn't allowed that team to settle. And when you think St Mirren are the only team that have beat them this season, it's unbelievable what they've achieved.
Like, you touched it there. For a neutral, it is very much like, oh, okay, Celtic won the league. Great, that's them over the line now. But credit where credit's due, they have been by far the best team in the league this season. What Ange Postecoglou has done is incredible. He's brought in players that have never played in Scottish or British football
before.
Yep. They do not know this culture. They probably don't know the language in the slightest. They have came in and instantly just bedded in to our game. So to have that sort of ability to mould a team that's so different to the one that he came into when Neil Lennon left, to do that so quickly as well, and to have back-to-back trophies, it's such an incredible feat. And it's not just the fact that they've done it, it's they've done it so comprehensively,
gone over the line so early in the season, and they just look so comfortable against pretty much every team that they're playing against. Apart from, as you say, St Mirren beat them and, you know, on the whole, took points off them as well at Celtic Park. But apart from that, like, you've got, like, they are running wild right now. They are by far the best team in Scottish football. And it really is a case of who on earth is going to stop them. Because this is just Ange Postecoglou's, it's his kingdom.
Yeah.
And it is really up to who's going to now try and take over. Because it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon.
It's interesting you say that, because, you know, saying that this is Postecoglou's palace, shall we call it, it makes me think that I just don't think this whole idea that some Premier League team is going to come in and be like, oh, we'll take you to England and you can manage in the Premier League. I just don't think he's interested. At all.
Mm.
I'm not saying he's not completely disinterested, but he certainly looks like a man who doesn't want to leave Celtic and sees the bigger picture. The thing is, this is a guy who's absolutely accomplished football in the Eastern Hemisphere. He's done everything that you would ever want to do. You know, he's done what's equivalent to winning the Premier League, the Champions League, and, you know, the European Cup. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's done everything over there. Finn's not having it at all.
But so what he has to do for Celtic. He's now got to push on himself and make sure Celtic challenge on a European stage. That's the next step for him and the squad.
But most importantly, Laura, he's in a country which utterly engrossed in its football, and he's never had that before.
Is it?
So that's why I just don't know why he would be... He'd be interested to go to the Premier League, but not yet. It would have to be for a seriously top job. Don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon.
I don't know. I think it's really clear whenever you listen to him talk, and when you see his career that he's had before this managerially, he's an incredibly ambitious man, and he's very confident in his own ability. With the greatest of respect, I know he's adored his time at Celtic, and the fans love him, and it's a symbiotic thing. Like, he loves the fans, he loves the setup at Celtic. But I think he's already achieved an awful lot, and he's very ambitious. I just don't see why that would be the top of the game for him. I think that the chance to not just go to the Premier League, but to go to somewhere else in Europe and really test himself against the best of the best would be where it is.
I wouldn't discount that, Finn. All I would say is, he wouldn't go for a middle-of-the-road Premier League job or a middle-of-the-road job anywhere else. He wants to go to a job that's a top job, not an Everton, for instance, or, you know, I'm thinking of even someone who's mid-table. What, West Ham, for instance, Laura. I don't think he would take those jobs.
I don't think you can really underestimate how not highly regarded the Scottish League is by those in the English Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that Steven Gerrard went to Aston Villa from Rangers is purely on his standing as an Englishman in England.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't think it necessarily was on the job that he did at Rangers. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's fair, but, you know, when... I think when whoever it was that was fired by Chelsea in the last 10 minutes was let go, and then people were saying, oh, I hope, you know, Chelsea don't come in for Ange. I don't think it was ever really on their mind. I don't think they'll probably even have heard who he is. So I think there's a bit of both of that. But I do think teams that do know their football and don't have the hubristic approach to the all-conquering Premier League things, I think teams in Germany, in Italy, potentially in Spain as well, in those big leagues would be looking to someone like Ange, and I think he could do an amazing job for clubs over there, especially ambitious clubs. I do just want to kind of go back and temper a little bit of it, because I think both things can be true at the same time, where you can say Postecoglou has done an amazing job, and look at how much of a machine this Celtic team is. They have been relentless. You know, they're on course for one of the highest ever points totals ever. And you look at the way he's turned it around from his initial couple of months at the club. I think it can also be true at the same time to say Celtic should be finishing really far ahead of everybody else because of the financial advantage that they've got, even on their closest rival, for the same reason that Rangers should comfortably be finishing second in the league. And I think when Aberdeen have finished above them in fairly recent seasons, that's actually an incredibly amazing achievement that I don't think really got the plaudits that it did at the time.
However, Finn, in saying that, Michael Beale and what he's done to the Rangers team now, which is exactly the same team that Van Bronckhorst had beforehand, shows you the impact a manager can have within a squad.
Totally, totally. And that's what I'm saying. It's both things are true at the same time. It's all fine and well to be the richest club in the country and to have basically any resources that you want to build your squad, but you have to do it well. Rangers have got decent resources. They don't have the same level that Celtic do, but they haven't used that wisely. And you see that now with the squad falling apart, the need for a complete overhaul in the summer. Celtic have done that brilliantly, and they have done for a number of years. And it's those two things. They need good players, which they can afford, but they need to be well coached, and there needs to be a plan, and they've got that as well, which is why they look so formidable. So it hats off to them, because they've been absolutely peerless. Nobody's been able to lay a glove on them this season. You get anomalies like, you know, the St Mirren game, or the Motherwell game, or Rangers at Ibrox were within, you know, minutes of beating them as well. But it sometimes looks like fine margins, but it's not, because even on the days that they're not potentially playing very well, they still seem to get, for want of a better expression, the rub of the green. But that's through the hard work and the dedication and the planning and the graft that they've got, and that is what champions do. That's what takes you over the line, and they're the only team in the country that have got that.
Regrets? No, it's good luck on it. So
I didn't find it funny.
From the top of Scottish football to the bottom end, but the fun end, playoffs. It's all been wrapped up, so we're into semi-final playoffs this week. League One semi-finals first leg, East Fife versus Clyde and Annan versus Dumbarton. This is going to be fun.
Again, it'll be interesting with the momentum to see what happens. I think East Fife Clyde is much of a muchness. I think that's just who turns up on the day. I think Annan versus Dumbarton, I know Dumbarton have fallen away quite dramatically towards the second half of the season, but I still think they might have enough to get through that against Annan fairly comfortably. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
You think they'll beat Annan?
Yep.
Interesting. The Pyramid playoff as well. This is going to be fun.
This is going to be good.
Spartans versus Albion Rovers on Saturday. Be great to have Spartans in League Two.
Yeah.
They've been, you know, for a long time ambitiously chasing that. But yeah, it'd be quite nice to see them.
They drew 3-3 in aggregate in the Lowland Highlands League playoff. Albion Rovers, though, they beat the champions, Stirling Albion, but still couldn't climb to safety. And it was because Bodyreg above them won their game at home to Elvie, which was, from their perspective, unfortunate, because they did all they could. And it was quite, like, fair play to them. They went to the champions and they pulled off exactly what they needed in terms of the result. It just wasn't to be for them elsewhere. But yeah, this is going to be a really good one. I'm looking forward to this. This is on Saturday, Spartans against Albion Rovers.
The playoff was amazing because I think it was close to 2,000 fans at the Spartans speaking game. Yeah, it was astonishing at Glebe Park. So
that's amazing.
You know, these teams, the Highland League and the Lowland League, are really well attended. It's a shame that we've, you know, it's something we'll probably get in, we have talked about, and we probably will get into talking about again closer to the summer, but all of these B teams coming in, like there are so many great storied teams in this, and I really hope they don't get drowned out by all these reserve teams flooding into the league, because the game's in rude health down there, and there are lots of really ambitious clubs. I know we've talked about the playoff system as well. It's great that these teams at least now have an avenue to potentially get up into the league system. We've seen Cove Rangers and Kelty Hearts and Bonnyreg and everything come up into the league system over the last couple of years. So I do wonder if Spartans have got enough. I mean, they've been really good in the Lowland League this season, and as we were just talking about in the Player of the Year section, Albion Rovers have really struggled at points this season, although they did they have found a couple of results. Ultimately it wasn't worth anything, but they have found a couple of results towards the end of the season, so it's all about the momentum. And I think it'll be close, this one, really close.
Football, by the hell.
Now, something special for all of you. In the first of three standalone shows this month, we're celebrating the incredible achievements of Scottish sides reaching European finals. Three clubs are celebrating milestone anniversaries this year, with the first being Aberdeen. It's been 40 years since the Dons lifted the European Cup Winners' Cup on the 11th of May 1983, beating Real Madrid 2-1 in Gothenburg. And we wanted to take you through the whole journey from the start of the Alex Ferguson era right through to the lasting legacy that achievement has had on the club. And we did that with none other than Scottish football legend, avid Aberdeen supporter and author of Glory in Gothenburg, Richard Gordon. The full thing's coming out this Wednesday, but for now, here's a wee sneak preview.
Yeah, Gothenburg. So we're going, and the word comes out that I've never flown. I've never been abroad at this point, and I've never been in an aeroplane, and I am terrified at the thought of flying. So when word comes out that P&O are putting on a ferry, this is just manna from heaven for me. And of course, back in those days, there was no online booking. So I remember sitting in the bank, in the wee office in the bank, just constantly dialing this number, P&O ferries, eventually getting through. And so I'd like to book on for the Gothenburg. The woman said, oh, it's sold out. It's full. Wow. There are no tickets left. So I had to fly because I wasn't missing it.
Yeah.
So there was just a group of our pals at the time. There were four or five of us who went over. So we went over on the Tuesday. And in typical Scottish football fan abroad, and obviously me, the first time I've ever been abroad, no luggage. So he just went there, got off the plane, and it was absolutely bucketing down. And it never stopped raining the whole 48 hours or whatever we were there. So wow. Actually, I remember going into a department store trying to find some kind of waterproof clothing. It kind of looked like an Adidas two-piece, basically waterproof trousers and a jacket, red, but it had two stripes rather than three on the side. So I wore that bloody thing the whole 2 days.
Another anniversary coming up this weekend is Rangers' run to the UEFA Cup final. They may not have clinched the trophy like Aberdeen did, but 15 years ago in 2008, Walter Smith's side went on an incredible run to the final. No mean feat in this day and age. Former Rangers midfielder Kevin Thompson joined us to look back on his memories of the campaign. What was Walter Smith's message after you went back in the dressing room? How did he pick you up?
I never actually got to speak to Walter after because I was one of the players selected to do a drugs test. So I actually missed the aftermath, and I would have missed the aftermath celebration because I was one of, I think, four. There was two. I want to say Christian Daly might have been the other one, but obviously he had never played. So I'm sure he could have obviously given a urine sample quite easily, whereas I'd obviously played the whole game. So it was... I actually got Tumashuk's jersey because he was drug tested, who was obviously the captain that night for Zenit. Mm-hmm. So I swapped jerseys with him in the wee medical that we had to obviously do our urine sample. But it took me about 3 and a bit hours to pee. So
oh my God,
a car had been left for me in the dock to go back to the hotel. I just remember coming back into the changing room and it being empty. Jimmy Bell and Davey Lavery were still there cleaning up, waiting for us so I could get a shower. And obviously my strip was still there because I had that horrible kind of gut-wrenching feeling that I'd gave Tumashuk my strip that I had on and that somebody might have half-inched my other strip that obviously we had invited up, and I was gutted to think that I might not have one of my own. But to be fair to Jimmy, he wouldn't let anyone steal obviously one of the boys' strips. So but when you've got boydies and that kicking about, you can never be sure half-inching all the strips. But also never actually sadly got an opportunity. I still remember Walter coming round obviously us on the pitch and kind of being a bit teary-eyed and putting his kind of hand on our shoulders and giving us a wee kind of hug, if you know what I mean. But I didn't actually know, and I've never actually asked any of the boys what was said after that game. So apart from obviously seeing everybody at the hotel when I eventually got back, you know what it's like, once you start, you can't stop. So I was peeing Powerade in water for the next 10 hours after that.
You can listen to that in full this coming weekend. Right, that's it from us this week. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Finn. Thanks to all of you who have been listening to us. If you do like us, then do rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify because it really helps the show. But you can always chat to us as well on Twitter at TSFSPodcast. But until next time, Finn, what do we say?
Go and pester Laura. It's time to listen to something else. Bye.
Bye.